Welcome to Normal Adjustments, because not all tales are created equal, and neither the people that tell them. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Normal Adjustments. This is your host, Nicole, and here I am another week and another story of life and its adjustments. And today with me, I have another very special guest, and his name is Jose Vega. Hi, Jose.
Hello.
Well, Jose and I were connected by a very special friend of mine who she should become my manager on scouting because she's recommended me so many people. I wanted to talk for a long time about this topic. There's a lot of topic in my backlog, and this one was particularly interesting for me, and I think for everyone. And how we're going to call this and shape this is normalizing to modern families. And Jose has a very interesting, wonderful, and I think inspiring story that that you're here to talk to us about. So I'm going to give you the floor just to introduce yourself quickly and talk a little bit about you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be a part of it. And I think it's so powerful being able to share your story. I think we all have something special and unique and wonderful to add. And if it could be uplifting and help anybody in any shape, way, or form, I'd love to do it. So that's, you know, part of my desire to be on here to share my story. But thank you so much for having me.
No, thank you for being honestly, because without people like you, this wouldn't exist. People, ballsy people and courageous.
Absolutely. Thank you. So my name is Jose Vega. I am 39 years old. I live in Florida, in Gainesville, Florida. Go Gators. And I'm originally from Puerto Rico, where I was born. I am a gay man, father of two. I have a 15-year-old daughter and a almost 11-year-old son. And I live with my beautiful fiance, Johnny William. We've been together almost 7 years. And it's been quite a journey, to say the least, of, you know, how these last 39, almost 40 years of my life have shaped from the beginning to where I am today. It's as if I'm have lived a couple of lives.
Oh my God, it sounds like it. But first of all, what are you drinking? Are you 40 almost, Jose? Like, can you give me the recipe?
Oh my God, that's funny. Yes, it's funny enough. I turned 40 in a couple of weeks. In a couple of weeks is my birthday, June 6th. I'll turn 40. So I appreciate it. I don't know. I do quite a bit of exercise. I try to eat healthy, although I can say that is not always the case. Trust me, I go to Puerto Rico and it's eating all the fried, all the frituras, everything that I can. I eat it because I'm truly a piggy at heart, but I try to eat well. I try to treat myself right and to be happy. And I think that's part of it. So
I can understand that. I try to live the best lifestyle, but also when I go to Puerto Rico, I need an alcapurria. Jose, I want to give you most of the floor to you. And we're going to start where I try to start at the beginning. And you said a couple of things there that, of course, kind of hints what the story will shape out to be. I think it's interesting because I always come from an angle of empathy, right? And I always say that the important thing about empathy is because we all have somewhere we came from and some circumstances that shaped us. And that's always kind of the standpoint you should take, because that perspective can be different because of that. And that's the importance of empathy. So I want you to tell that story of your beginnings.
Okay, absolutely. So I come from a very traditional Puerto Rican home, born and raised in Puerto Rico. My dad, for the first part of his life, was a dairy farmer, and my mom was just a stay-at-home mom. I have two sisters, and I'm the only boy and then the middle child. So we were raised in a very traditional gender role kind of family. My dad worked outside. My mom took care of the house and the kids. That was her job. That's what she was supposed to do. But I think that some of the bigger outlying things was faith was such a huge part of our growing up. I grew up in a Pentecostal family, and it wasn't a casual going. We didn't go maybe once a month. We went 3, 4, 5 days a week. So church was a huge part of our life. I mean, that was really our identity. And that was the people that we associated with. So members of that community and being devout Christian. That was kind of where we came from. And that really shaped who I was, because I lived that. And that was just the norm. I was expected to live that kind of life. So my desire was to be pleasing to God. My desire was to be a follower of Christ and act like him and follow his teachings based on what I was told. So it was really challenging, because as far back as I can remember, I always remember that there was some sort of attraction to men, but I knew that that was sinful based on everything that I read.
Right.
And I was told, and everything that you heard every single week, even if it was just a small joke or something that was mentioned from the pulpit, you know, sinful homosexuals going to hell. So I certainly didn't want to go to hell. So my whole upbringing with attraction to men, but yet hearing how sinful and wrong that was going to hell, really shaped a huge fear in me and not wanting to go to hell.
Right.
And so I had to always push back those desires. And anytime that I thought of that, what I innately thought of was, I have to pray and I have to get all this stuff out, because I certainly do not want to live a life that I'm not supposed to live. I'm supposed to live by the Bible and the way that God has ordained me to be. So that was really the shape of how my mindset was put. And it's funny, even as a young kid, how much you can be indoctrinated and how much your train of thought and thinking could be even from when you're a little kid. So that's how I grew up.
And absolutely kind of shaping that from an angle of fear. And like you say, shame. I recently learned, I think, using that term to describe all these things, which I lived in shame from my condition, from like what I have. So, and I understand that's very common in the queer community in general, which is a horrible feeling.
Absolutely. Because everybody wants to be like everybody else. People don't want to be outcast. And so I knew that in the church, there was nobody that I could really talk to. It was some of the pastors that I confided, you know, being my senior year of high school, where I can't tell you the countless times that I prayed and went to retreats where basically they're casting demons out and fasting and praying and reading the Bible and begging God to change of who I was. So it was fear-based, which is funny, because the whole preface of Christianity and that God is love, but that's not the faith that I grew up in. Everything was based out of fear. I didn't want to be rejected. I didn't want to be shamed, and I didn't want to lose the whole life that I had constructed and that had been constructed for me that I had to live.
Right.
And so it was fear and guilt based. And it was really stressful as a young child when you don't know who you are and you're so vulnerable and you're by yourself.
So then were you sent to kind of conversion therapies yourself?
Yeah. So the church that I went to was a pretty big church, and they did something called Breakthrough Weekends, which basically it's a weekend where you're there from Friday till Sunday. And it's a ton of church services. They do demon casting sessions. You fill out clinics, filling out papers where you're essentially confessing as to sin. So they'll say, have you struggled with homosexuality? Then you put yes, drug use, yes, alcoholism, and just a whole bunch of stuff that you're having to confess in writing and to people. And then they pray for you. And then there are sessions where they're trying to get you to be filled with the Holy Spirit. I mean, it's really...
Oh my God.
It's a circus in many ways, shape, or form, because they're really exalting some of these things. And so not only did I go through these, then I did it so much that I became a leader, and I was actually leading and organizing these things. So I probably went through 30, 40 of these sessions, 30, 40 weekends, where it's spent entirely and just begging God to change you, to make you who he wanted you to be. So
what you thought he wanted you to be.
Exactly. That's why I said it was carved out for me. So I had no option. So once that was carved, I didn't think there was no remedy. That is
right.
That's the only option. That's the only hope. If you don't want to go to hell, it's you do this and you're good
before and you God
and you're fine. There's no A or B. It's just A. That's all you had.
And then, okay. So you went through those, and then you kind of like you convinced yourself basically with these things that, okay, I can do this and I should become a leader to kind of help others.
Absolutely.
For how long did that happen?
I mean, that was for years. I mean, I was really heavily involved since I was 17, 18, and I came out at 31. But the last 3-4 years of my time at church, I kind of really started to question. And at the beginning was just a little bit of questioning towards the really end. I stopped going to church completely. But from 18 to about 27, I was really, 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 really hardcore.
Oh my God. Well, okay. So tell us about that. Like how did that happen?
Well, I convinced myself that I wasn't gay. And just like the church taught you, you're not gay. You just struggle with homosexuality. So just like an alcoholic, as long as they stay away from alcohol, they may struggle with alcoholism, but they're not alcoholic. So the same thing, just stay away from men, stay away from the temptation. And God's enough. So I stayed away from men, and that was just a struggle. Like everybody else had their own kind of struggle. I stayed away from that, and I was not gay. I never accepted the fact that I was gay, that I had those kind of attractions. It was a temptation, and I just stayed away. So I just got so involved in helping other people kind of come out of that kind of lifestyle and other stuff. It wasn't just the gay people that I ministered to, but I got so involved in. So from high school, you know, senior year until 27, I mean, I was a leader at the church. I didn't casually go. I was full leadership. In college, I was going to full-time college, and then I was doing an internship, which basically was training to be a pastor. And so I lived in a low-income neighborhood, and we did ministry 3, 4, 5 days a week. 6 days a week, I was at the church at 6 a.m. to go pray. So it just became this full-fledged obsession. This was my only way out, is to take on this life, accept it, and everything's going to be fine. And because I wanted to live the life that God wanted me to live, I just accepted it and ran full-fledged with it, never doubting it. And that was the truth.
So do you think it was all inspired in yourself and feeling that that was the thing tying you to that life versus from real passion?
Absolutely. It was fear-based. But I think after you do something so long, it's custom, it's fear-based. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to go to hell. And I truly accepted it as my truth for all those years. During my senior year, I started dating my ex-wife. And I knew her. She's Puerto Rican. When I was 6 and she was 5, our parents were really good friends at the church, and she knew everything from the very beginning. She knew that I had those type of desires, but we both were naive enough to believe that God was enough. God was enough to heal me. God was enough to restore me. God was enough to keep me straight. And we both decided to pursue a relationship knowing that that was the case. There was no deception in it. We both full-heartedly believe that that was enough, and we just lived off of that.
Right. So then you got married, mm-hmm. Young, like a very young age as well.
Yeah. I was 23 and she was 22.
Okay.
And we were married almost 10 years.
And then that's where your kids come from. So that marriage.
Yeah. They come from that marriage. And it was so hard, because I think that on top of your fighting all those desires and all those urges, you know, I married such an absolute beautiful woman. She's the best. She's the absolute best. She was the best in supporting me and loving me and trying to be the best that she could. And it was so hard, because I think when people say, really, it's me that I have to work on, it's me, not you. Mm-hmm. I think that could be very much cliche for so many people. And walking out of marriage, somebody that you generally love and respect a lot, that you have 2 kids with, was really challenging. And on top of that, feeling so much shame for failing at the marriage, leaving someone that's amazing, breaking up a home, and then all the guilt that comes from having to accept that maybe I was gay. And so...
Right. So before we get to the divorce and breakup part of it, what was the inflection point, though? Like, what was that moment that changed things?
Well, I kept praying. And so for all these years, I devoted myself to God and praying and reading the Bible and doing ministry. But I still keep coming back to having these desires and attraction to men. And so I just could not understand. So if God was enough, and if I had resisted and stayed away from men and from anything like that, If it's the same thing as an alcoholic and I refrained from everything, why was I still having those kind of desires? And why was I still having those kind of attractions? And I really started to hit a really low point. I hit a really, 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 really deep depression, super depressed. Mm. You know, I got to a point where I was like, I did not want to live anymore. There was no hope. Right. I was so engulfed in loneliness, I was so scared that there was no remedy. There was no remedy because I would rather kill myself than have to accept the fact that maybe I was gay. And so I know that I hit that deep point when I thought about suicide and thought maybe I should just kill myself. And I just remember one day, which I still remember today, it was a Sunday. I didn't go to church. My ex-wife went with the kids to the church and I just went for a jog because to me, like, that's therapy. And I went jogging and I remember just going to this intersection that's actually close to where we live now. And it's a main intersection. And in the middle of the road, when I looked down, there was a Bible that a car had just kind of driven by it and it had broken and like all the leaves were flying out. And I don't know why in that very moment, I just felt like something that said to me, like, if you are made in God's image and he says that you're beautifully and wonderfully made, there's nothing wrong with you. You're not broken. You're not damaged. That's what I carried my whole life. I felt so damaged, so broken. And it's so horrible to feel that way. When you feel,
oh my God, yes.
You have to, you and who you are to the core of you is dirty and broken.
Yeah.
It just made yourself worth so bad. And I remember feeling like, I'm not trash. I'm not trash. I'm actually beautiful. And I deserve happiness. I deserve to be happy. And that second right there, I said, yeah, I'm not trash. I'm amazing. God made this exactly the way that I am today. I don't have to change. And I accepted maybe I am gay, maybe I'm not, but I'm moving forward with whatever it is that this person is. And from that day on, everything changed. Because after that, a couple of days later, I remember I talked to my ex-wife and said, I can't continue being with you because I'm not being genuine to who I am.
Right.
I can't love you and I can't follow what I said. So that was the other really difficult part to that. But the first part was really accepting me at the core of who I am and loving that, I'll say, which has been all these years.
Yeah, it's interesting because you held yourself from a faith and like the church, but hating yourself and rather, like you say, rather than love image. Which is, you know, extremely contradicting. And you had people you spoke to at that moment? Like, did you had a support system?
Not really. I mean, I had a couple, but so I had a couple people at the church were the pastors that were basically essentially doing the conversion therapy on me. And their only solution was, God's enough. God's going to restore you. Just keep going, keep praying, keep casting demons out. But that obviously didn't work. And that's why part of the reason why I started questioning. So if you're doing the same thing for all these years and it's not giving you any kind of results, insanity is to still believe that you're going to get a different outcome by doing the same things. So I had to change course.
Right.
And I didn't have a lot of people. I had an ex-brother-in-law that I confided enough and could share, but it was very, very, very few people. I didn't have any gay friends. I didn't know anybody that was gay because I never associated with anybody outside of church. That was my whole support system. That was my friends. That was everything. So I knew maybe one or other person. It was really a lot of me and myself and trying to drag myself out.
Well, I admire your courage and your resilience to actually do it for yourself. Not for yourself only, but by yourself. Sorry, I'm trying to say, because that's not easy. Like, support systems and community usually is one of the biggest drivers or support for a person. And it was a shame that you didn't have that. Although I can say, or maybe slightly correct you, you didn't know any gay people. You didn't know openly gay men.
Absolutely. Let me say this. One of the other biggest driving factors behind when I was at my bottom was my kids. I was like, you know, these kids didn't ask to be born and they definitely don't deserve to be fatherless. So I have to be strong. I have to pull myself together. And so I knew that even if I was dragging myself, as long as I was moving towards the front, even if I'm dragging myself half an inch by half an inch, you have to get it together. And that was a huge factor. And then going back to the other point, absolutely. I can't even tell you the amount of people that have come out to me from church. Tons of people who have come out. It's even crazy. Close friends that I knew that after I came out said, I have to confess, I have to be honest, but you don't ever say that. You don't share that because that's not an option. So everybody's so scared they're going to be outed or be casted out that no one says anything, but people are actually a lot closer than you realize. Close friends that I knew came out to me and I just couldn't believe that that was the case. we couldn't even have that dialogue when we both
back in the day. Yeah. Interesting. Okay, Jose. So then what happens next?
Well, I touched a little bit about the divorce and separation was just excruciating. I remember, you know, I said my ex-wife was just so amazing and just, you know, I was with her 15 years. So just breaking the routine and in my home and my house, everything was so hard, but I gave her the house. She kept everything. I remember I had my car and my clothes. I picked up and I left. I stayed with my parents 2 or 3 months. And then I got a 1-bedroom, 1-bath apartment that was tiny. I had nothing, not a single thing to my name. I was going to yard sales, garage sales, thrift stores, trying to piece little things so that I could have a home. And that was the hardest, starting over and not having anything. I remember I bought this little futon from Craigslist because my parents, my family turned their back from me. No one in my family supported me, really. My younger sister, but she was in Puerto Rico.
Were you in Florida already by this point?
Oh yeah, we were in Florida. Yeah. Yeah. This was, okay. All this was in Florida. I came my senior year to study from Puerto Rico. I did my senior year here in Gainesville, Florida. And then I did college and then so everything was here. Yeah. And my mom and my dad and my older sister all lived here and they all deeply in the faith. And so my parents completely turned their backs on me. And I think my older sister just didn't know how to react. I think she tried to support me, but she didn't because I don't know that she knew how to. My parents and my sister really took a really active role with my ex-wife, which is fine. She needed the support, but I think in fully supporting her, they completely left me out. And I remember when I told my parents, hey, I got this little apartment, I need help. They actually left on a vacation with my ex-wife and they didn't even tell me. I found out because one of my kids just slipped and said, hey, do you know we're leaving? And I'm like, where? And they said, oh, we're going, you know, on vacation with my family. And they just left me. So I bought this little $60 couch and I tied it on the top of my little 4-door car. And I remember dragging it up 2 flights of steps and tried to create a home for me and for my kids.
Right. What did you say? I'm just curious to your parents at the moment that you kind of like got home. Were you completely honest at that moment of what had happened?
Oh yeah, I was because I had hit it and concealed it so much. Everything just kind of erupted. I couldn't. I mean, I sat my parents down. I remember I went to their house. I said, listen, I separated. I'm going to get divorced. I'm gay. I'm attracted to men. I'm going to live a gay lifestyle with a man. And there's nothing you guys can do about it. And I know my parents went berserk. My mom was the one that went absolutely just crazy. And so from that day on, like those words came out, I'm gay. And granted, I'm the only boy. I was the golden child. And that completely changed from the golden to the black sheep of the family. And that's really still how it is till this day. And it's been like 9 years, you know, hasn't changed.
Oh my God. I'm so sorry. Okay, now what's happened next? how do you go about kind of like basically just having a new life?
Well, it's really hard because I think that, okay, so a lot changed in not having my kids every day and in a relationship with my ex-wife and in our home and everything that I had was completely stripped. But I think that what hurt the most was your family because being so close with my parents, being the only boy, the only grandkids in my family are my kids. The only boy, I mean, I was the golden child and it really hurt because as a child, you need that love and that respect and that support from your parents. But I think as an adult, you need it probably even more, especially when you had kids. So, and I was really close to them. So it was hard when I came out because my parents completely rejected me and the relationship completely ended. It completely stopped abruptly. And so I think that as a child, you never think that you're going to grow up and that you're going to lose the support and the love of your parents. That was really hard because that was such a huge part. Holidays, you're with the parents. Mother's Day with the parents. Yeah. Father's Day with the parents. All these major holidays that I had always celebrated with my family were no longer. And they haven't been for 9 years. Mm-hmm. It was really hard. It was really lonely because I didn't have a family. I lost it all. And the family that I thought I had, I didn't have either.
Right. It's interesting because at those moments, kind of other people become your family.
Oh, yeah.
And did you have any of that? So were people kind of stepping up and kind of helping you?
I was a part of a really big church here in Gainesville. And I can say I can count with one hand the amount of people that kind of stepped up and said, you know what, I'm going to love you either way. It was very few. I was very disappointed. But I did meet people from the street, people that I had never associated with, because they're people who were different faith or people who are atheists. And my whole life, I heard those are the nasty, those are really bad people. And what I came to see and learn was all these people from other faiths who I would had always been told, stay away with, stay away from, don't associate, they're bad people, were the people that lifted me up. And I did get a group of family here in Gainesville, friends that became family. And I told this to my mom one day. I said, Mommy, the people that you and your church community call the lepers, the dirty people that you don't want to get near, were the people that lifted me up. When I had no hope, when I had nothing, the only people that grabbed me, picked me up, loved me, supported me are the ones that you would never be caught dead with. And I've seen that although you've said that these are such bad people, they have had the most beautiful of hearts. They've never questioned. They never judged. They just said, let's love you with a sincere heart. And that to me was such a huge lesson, because I've stayed away and even judged those people myself, because that's what I was taught, to judge these people, when in fact, these people had such a beautiful perspective and such sincere and genuine hearts. It's prettier than anything I had seen.
Right. And it's what everything what you ever wanted, acceptance.
Exactly. Exactly. They wanted me for me. And that's the biggest thing that I've learned. I want someone to love me unconditionally, not conditioned. And the church has conditions. You act the way that they want you to act, you're fine. The second you step out of that norm and you act and do and feel and believe and think and love outside of what they say is okay, you're wrong. You're outcasted. So even my ex-wife had to leave the church that we went because people criticized her. How dare you as a divorced woman be doing XYZ, because we're both in ministry? And she had to leave for a good chunk of time, which how disrespectful. Her husband, who was gay, said, I cannot be with you anymore. And people still decided to trample on her. And so I think that's the other part.
Well, that says a lot. Was she kind of like that? Did that open her eyes as well in a way?
I think so, because she had a lot to say. I think she's changed a lot. She's matured a lot. And our relationship has continued. I'm blessed to say that today we have a beautiful relationship. I love her. She's the mother of my kids. We've been able to have a really respectful relationship, friendship together. My partner, her and her husband love each other. We go on family vacations together. But I will say that she's changed a lot. She's matured a lot. And I think she's seen through everything that's happened to her and to me, that there's a lot of things that we put the church and the faith on pedestals. And we didn't realize that there was so many things that we didn't know. We were ignorant. We've been forced to see things through other lens, which has had us acting in different ways. It has opened up her mind a lot. I have changed a lot. I have obviously become a lot more open. She has too, which has really surprised me, because we're both really strict, really firm in our faith. And not that she's not a believer, she is, but she believes in a different way.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you went through that in a way, because now you're here to tell your story.
Absolutely.
And I want you to now tell the other side. So you start living as a gay man. I guess that. Not at the beginning, I know these journeys, and it's not like out and proud immediately, but eventually, I guess that you got there. So tell us a little bit about that and what got you comfortable, and then how do you meet your partner?
Okay. Yeah, it's a learning process, because I think that society has taught us, you know, a relationship is really a man and a woman. And so anything outside of that is just so weird. And I've had to really get used to it, because even at first, I was like, ew, two men, like even for me, I was like, and I'm gay and I'm the one who have attracted to men. And even I couldn't get used to the idea. So it was a learning process. I just think you need to learn to love yourself. And so I think that was the biggest take out that I had. When I learned to love myself and accept myself for who I was, and it just didn't matter what other people thought. And I could be so comfortable in my own skin. I'm a super proud gay man, but I don't know. I have problems with labels and having to, I don't have to be that gay man. I could just be a man. I'm a dad. I'm a I'm a partner. I'm a father. I'm a friend. I'm a brother. I'm so many things, but I hate the fact of having to associate. Cause you know, but when I was straight, I didn't say, well, I'm a straight man. No, I hate that. I am so proud of who I am. I love who I am. I don't regret who I am. I'm happy where I am. I'm comfortable. I'm successful. I'm working hard. I'm making a difference. I'm raising two kids with my ex-wife. I'm trying to be positively contributing to society, to friends, and trying to give the best that I can. And that's all I can, do. And that's enough for me.
No, and that is lovely to hear. I love that thing about labels. In another podcast on the previous season, we kind of opened the podcast with that topic of labels, because I was telling the guest, Alex, that what does he describe his job as? And he's like, oh my God, I've had so much trouble like describing my job, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm like, me too. And we went on a rant on labels. It's just that is we always look for that word, that particular. And I agree. I think it's refreshing that you said that.
Cool. Well, I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even if I can add to the whole labels thing, I mean, even just in the gay world, there's so many types of gay men. It's just incredible. And so there's everything. I've seen the gamut. And this is one of the things I've learned from my partner. I remember one of our first arguments when we first started dating, he goes, Jose, you don't have to understand something to respect it. You don't have to get it. It doesn't have to make sense to you. Your logic doesn't have to, it doesn't have to make sense. It doesn't have to make logical, concrete sense. You just respect it. And so I've applied that to the way that I live, not only in the gay world, but even with everything. It's funny, I was talking to my ex-wife yesterday about one of her friends and a situation. And I told her that, I said, listen, you don't have to understand it. You don't have to get it. You don't have to like it. You just have to respect people. And you have to give that respect and support them no matter where they're at, no matter what they're going through. Because everyone's going to live life the way that they want to. You live life your way, they live life the other way. Just support them and love them. And the other thing I would say is, funny enough, something that I thought I would become more callous and angry and bitter, I've learned to be more merciful, more understanding with people. As long as you're not hurting other people and you want to live life doing XYZ and I've heard some bizarre things, I don't care. I don't have to understand it. I've become so much more understanding because I have been so rejected and pushed back and beat down by people. Instead of becoming angry and bitter, I want to learn to love people better. I want to be there. I want to support people because I've seen how hard it is when I was by myself. I wish I had somebody to pick me up. That would have been so much easier than going at it alone.
Yeah, no, and now you live a life of a true service in a way because it's service to people. It doesn't matter race, color, height, sexual preference, identifying with, it doesn't matter. It's about people for people, right?
Yeah, because just like you said, we all struggle with something. And so my thing was being a gay man in the Christian faith, but yours could be completely different. And all I want to do is support and love people, no matter what it is that their thing is or where they're coming from.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think I'm biased, but that's the correct mentality. So I commend you for kind of like being able to shift that in a positive outlook, because like you said, it could have created the negative feelings of anger and resentment, etc.
Yeah.
I'm just curious, how do you meet your partner?
So we met each other on a gay dating platform. And so it was a little more than for dating, but that's how we utilized it because I didn't really go out a lot. You know, I was a dad with kids. I didn't go to the clubs. And so I wanted something serious. And that's kind of what I put on my profile, that I was looking for somebody. So it was online. And it's funny because he's Puerto Rican as well. And he had just moved to Gainesville a couple months earlier. So had that not happened, I mean, I wasn't going to go to the grocery store and looking at people and winking and figuring out if they're gay or not. You know, I just didn't have a space to meet gay men. I didn't have a ton of gay friends. So yeah, it was online, you know.
Nice. And how long after your kind of process, how long after did you meet him?
So him was probably about a year and a half. I mean, there was one or two other guys before. They were just kind of friends. And and I was trying to really figure out what it was that I wanted and who it was that I was. And this just happened to be the right thing at the right time. And so it just kind of worked out. But we've been engaged and been together 7 years. And, you know, he's been with me. My son is 10. He's been with us since my son was 3.
So wow.
That's his whole life. My youngest, my son is like, I got 3 dads. And that to him is just completely normal. It's me, my partner, William, and then Jason, who is my ex-wife's husband. And so to him, that's just the norm. I got 1 mom and 3 dads.
That's lovely, though. So yeah, let's dig into that bit, because I'm quite interested in how do you harmonize that situation? Like, how do you go about now? Of course, there's wounds to heal. There are learnings to have, both you and your ex-wife, like you said, like opening up, kind of learning about a life outside of your doctrines, and kind of then accepting you, and but then at the same time a relationship with each other that needs to continue, because a lot of people might have just gone the route of I don't want a relationship with you whatsoever, and she didn't as well. So I'll commend to her a lot for having kind of our kids need our both parents, and I don't want to create that resentment in the kids either. So yeah, tell us all about that, because I'm fascinated.
Okay. So I could really say that has been something that has been a journey. It didn't just start like that. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of hurt. I will own up. I really hurt my ex-wife a lot, because for someone who's loved you and respected you and supported you 100% without any doubt, and for you to say, I don't want to be with you, was really hurtful. And she still believed that God could change me. So it took a lot of time for her to come to terms. Well, he is gay. We can't be together. But we maintained a cordial relationship just because of the kids. And my commitment from the beginning was, these kids didn't ask to be born. I want to be present. Not just I have to, I want to be present. So we were really present both at all the kids' activities. I think that there was a lot of always respect between us, but I can really give a lot of kudos to Jason, who is her husband, and William, who is my partner, because when I started dating William first, and then when Leslie started dating Jason, we met, and it was with so much respect. Jason came in with so much respect from the first day I met him. He earned my respect. And I think just showing common courtesy and respect to one another, and chit-chatting here and there, we started to feel more comfortable. And William, my partner, is not threatened by my ex-wife. Jason, who is, you know, her husband, is not threatened by me. I think they're the ones that really solidified that, and both kind of made it feel like, you know what, it's okay to have that relationship. I think they both kind of realized how much me and Leslie truly care about each other. Before being together, we were friends our whole lives. We were little kids. Jason, when they're moving, because we helped them move into their new house, he showed me, he goes, look, it's your wedding pictures. And he goes, I'm not going to get rid of them, because that's where your kids came from. If they want to see where they came from, they can see mommy and papi's picture. And that just says a lot about him as a man and how comfortable he is in himself, and my partner as well. You know, I talk to Leslie almost every single day, because, you know, there's so much that entails with school and the kids and all these sports that they have and activities. We talk every single day, but because they're two truly confident people in themselves, they've been able to really promote healthy relationships. And it started slow, seeing each other, hanging out, going to dinner. I mean, we've done family vacations, but we all 6 of us have stayed under one roof, which is a huge place to be. And the kids don't have to choose between mom and dad.
Right.
Divorced kids is really challenging, because I feel that they have to choose one or the other. And Jason and William and me and Leslie, we've had to also be a part of that. We're big parts of it. I think the biggest gift that we can give the kids is that gift that although we're not together, the kids can have mom and dad together. They don't feel that they have to choose. And I told my daughter when Leslie started dating Jason, I said, you know what? I love Jason. He's great. It's just more love. Mm-hmm. It's more love for you and Savi. And so I think that the fact that they saw that I didn't see Jason as a threat, he's not trying to take over as a dad, but he's there to give more love and support. I don't know. I just think 4 people had to genuinely give, be mature, add love, and we've created something truly beautiful. And everybody's like, this is so strange and rare. It shouldn't be. It should be the norm, but it really is not all that common.
I know, and I love it because you just said it. It's approaching it with an angle of love, like everything. And I've said this before, like, kids don't care about a family unit. They care about love and, like, receiving that love and being accepted and all that. Like, the family unit we generate, right, as society.
Yeah.
And how does that look like? It doesn't need to be this masculine man and this feminine woman.
Yeah.
Or it doesn't need to be two. It can be, like you say, it can be one and a lot of extras, or it can be four.
Yeah.
And you know, when something comes from a gut, you gotta, like, pursue it, which is what happened to you, right? It was like, this is the correct thing, this is what you need to do. But sometimes like doubt lingers and it's like, oh, was that correct? Like, was that really good? Blah, 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 blah. And even though I don't try to go by external validation or other people's validation, it does help from time to time, right? So that's kind of what I felt that happened. Like, those two external forces, of course, coming in with love, but also validated the acceptance in a way of, and saying, like, okay, we can do this. This can actually coexist and exist.
Yeah, absolutely. I knew that I made the right decision, but yeah, I agree. I mean, who doesn't like to have that validation? And it's funny because, you know, I tell this to everybody, I said, the people that not only being validated, but honestly, like, those are the closest people in my life. My partner, my ex-wife and her husband, honestly, like, that is the top people in my life now. If I know I need something, those are the people that I call. Those are the people that I rely on, because I still don't have that support from my family. So yeah, it's beautiful to be validated. I really did feel comfortable. I don't think I ever doubted that I make the right decision, but yeah, it was really the cherry on top where we made something so beautiful. And yeah, it just feels so good when you're like, goodness, look at everything that has come out. And I saw it in one of the best things I've ever heard. My ex-wife was talking to one of her friends and she was talking poorly about her ex-husband. And my daughter said, that's such a shame because my parents love each other. And to me, like, that is the biggest thing that she can see, that mom and dad are not together, but there's love, a lot of respect. And to me, that is, I could not ask for anything more in my life than my daughter and my son seeing that there's love and respect between mom and dad and that we got each other's back.
Yeah, no, and that's wonderful. I think that was going to be my next question. How did the kids deal with it? Or like, did they get weird questions, or how did you communicate it, or was it not needed to communicate it just by example that you proceeded? Yeah.
Well, it was different for both kids. My youngest, my son, he knew no different. He was two when mom and I separated. So all he saw was me be with William. And it's funny because he said two things to his mom. He goes, you didn't invite Papi to your wedding? How rude. So he sees that mom and dad are really good friends, but I didn't go to her wedding. And in his mind's like, that was kind of rude, but he doesn't realize it might've been a little bit awkward if I'm the ex-husband is at her wedding. That's the day that she needed to focus on her husband, not on me. And the family would have felt uncomfortable. So my son knew no different, just like drawing three dads in a family portrait at kindergarten, you know, and everybody's like, whoa, three dads. And to him, that's just normal. No, my daughter was completely different story. When she was seven, she goes, you say that mommy is such an amazing woman. She goes, so then why aren't you with her? And don't tell me that I'm too young to understand. She's like, she wanted me to tell her the truth. And I had to say, well, Bobby just likes boys. And because I like boys, I can't be with mommy. And it was really difficult for her at first. She felt really uncomfortable because she has no other friends who have gay dads or gay moms. So she had no other example. So she, again, were conditioned to want to be the same as everybody else. So she had to learn to be okay with it. And then my daughter was going to church. And so she's like, I'm hearing things at church that you're living a sinful life. And she had to reconcile what that meant to her. And so she has come to terms. She's totally cool with it now. She's in high school. She's Miss Popular. She's a gorgeous little Puerto Rican at school. And she goes, I got the two hot gay dads and everybody loves you. We're all involved. So, you know, she has had to come to terms with having gay dads, being part of a church that said things that she had to make sure that she understood so that she knew how she was going to feel about it. So she's had to, at a very young age, grow up and swallow and digest doctrine and faith to see how she felt about her dad, and which put us in a really difficult situation for some time because I didn't shove it down her throat, but it was really hard for that time when she's like, I just don't feel comfortable with gay dad. I'm sorry.
Right. Yeah. Well, Jose, I I love how it all came together, and like you say, all in the spirit of love. And I love that. Like it really kind of make my heart warm, because it is. It's empathy and it's acceptance, and it's all from a positive outlook. And I'm very glad that you have this going for you, and you've been able to live your truth. Life gave you another chance and to make it right for yourself.
Absolutely. And I will say this, someone says, how does it feel to be gay now? How does it feel? And I said, it feels like me. It feels that for once, I don't have to change who I am, and I don't have to strive to be something else. It feels like I'm living how I should have been living for all those years.
All along.
Yeah. And it sounds so simple, but you can imagine trying to be something that you're not for your whole life, and how draining that is, how exhausting that is. So to be able to say, this is what it is, and this is good enough, and I'm me, and that's perfect. And I'm telling you, it's just life-changing.
Well, amen to that.
Amen to that.
And before we close, I wanted you to speak a little bit about kind of, we briefly kind of sweep my way the fact that you are working in Florida with conversion therapies, but not on the part of converting people, but on the other side. Please tell us about it and your work and labor and what's happening in Florida at the moment.
So I have worked on the city level, on the county level, and then on the state level. So in essence, conversion therapy is trying to change someone's sexuality by doing therapy, but for the most part, it is faith-based. So I was able to work with the county and city commissioners to pass a law where it is illegal to practice conversion therapy for minors under 17 in the city of Gainesville and in the county of Gainesville and the Alachua County. We were able to pass that law. So I was part of the testimony, basically sharing my story of how much it affected me, how it affected my self-worth, how it drove me to almost wanting to kill myself. So I was able to use my testimony and share that to actually pass the law. So that was really, really, really exciting that the city of Gainesville and Alachua County had passed something where it is illegal to practice conversion therapy on minors. But anybody over 18, it is not illegal. So that there's a lot that was done, but then there's still a lot of work that needs to be done, and just really teaching and educating people the dangers of conversion therapy. I think that a lot of people go to a therapist, parents take their kids, and they want their kids to get fixed, and they don't want the kids to be gay, thinking that they're going to suffer because they're being gay. But I think that conversion therapy does a lot more damage to them than any kind of outside pressure maybe could put on them.
Well, absolutely. It's ridiculous. Just because it's like somebody told me to act like I don't have lymphedema, which is a condition I was born with, is literally the same. And it's like, how, like my hiding basically in terms of the work with conversion therapies and the law passed, and now the law was passed. Now what's next?
So what's next? I mean, they're trying to do something, because we were able to do that in the city of Gainesville and then in the Alachua County, and a lot of different cities and counties in the state of Florida have been able to pass similar bans where it's illegal to practice it on minors under 17, but it has not yet been passed on the entire state of Florida. And so it's really challenging because they're just a bunch of different cities and municipalities. So it's not across the board, which I think it will get to a point where maybe it will pass unanimously and it will cover the entire state. But I think that the efforts that I did where I live are being done throughout the state by a lot of really brave people and lawmakers and attorneys who are trying to pass this law. But that's only part of it, because there's a lot of protections in the faith community that basically say that they can do those things. And I think that a lot of people don't realize the hidden dangers of conversion therapy when they, like I did, I went to conversion therapy myself. My parents didn't put me in conversion therapy. I decided to do it because I didn't want to be gay. So I think that as long as we share that message of the dangers, that maybe we can get people from wanting to go to it if they understand how dangerous it can be in your self-worth and the damages that it does to you as a person individually.
Yeah, absolutely. You said something very nice when we started speaking about your beginnings now to being able to tell your testimony over the benefit of others, kind of like a life's journey or like a life mission.
Absolutely. You know, I've just been through it. And once I kind of got through everything, I just thought, okay, I can coast. At least I love myself. I accept myself. I have a beautiful partner, a good life. I can just kind of chill and coast. I didn't want to stir anything up. I just let me just do me. And then I realized the only way that you can take everything that happened that was very painful, damaging to you, is to use your voice and your testimony to help others that maybe don't have a voice or maybe don't even understand so far. So, I mean, who wants to get in front of, you know, I went to Tallahassee and spoke in one of the press conference, a briefing of my story and getting to a point where I thought of suicide. Who wants to share that? Who wants to air all their dirty laundry? But I think my heart is to be a voice for the ones who don't have a voice, the ones who are not strong enough and don't have an option. So I've been sharing my testimony in different groups and different people whenever I can, just like now, just to share my story. So if it can help somebody just to get a little bit of glimmer of hope, there's always a way out. There's always a solution. Everything always does get better as long as you're consistent and keep moving forward. Even if you're crawling, even if you're dragging yourself, drag yourself in the right direction. All those little actions will give you the strength to keep moving forward, and you're going to start seeing the changes little by little. And that's why I've decided to share my story, just to be a glimmer of hope.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why we're both here. That's why this space exists. It's because of that, because I don't want anybody to feel alone. You express that, and that is a horrible feeling, and nobody should feel that way. I'm so happy that you're here, and thank you for giving me this time to tell your story and the courage to tell this story. You know, I'm a sucker and a fan of vulnerability, and this is vulnerability at its best. I wish you all the best in the next years to come.
Thank you so much. And thank you for having a platform where you can share these kind of stories that show people that there is a way out. And I will say one last thing. I remember in church, it always says the truth will set you free. Well, funny enough, the truth that I'm loved exactly how I am, and that I didn't have to change, and that being gay is okay, has been the truth that has set me free. And I am the freest I've ever been. And some people in church would be rolling over in their graves now, but that is the truth. The truth is that you are exactly, and you're beautiful and perfect that way. So thanks for allowing me to share this story.
Absolutely. Whenever you want to come back, there's a platform here for you to speak even more so on other stuff.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
No, thank you, Jose. And thank you, everybody, for listening. See you soon.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.